this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we are on our way to Fort Worth, Texas for the 2014 Texas Association of Magicians. And the reason that we're talking now is because I'm in the back seat with Charlie Randall of H&R Magic Books. Hey there, Charlie.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. And in the front seat is Kathy, my wife, who is driving. You might hear her chime in from time to time, but not necessarily because... Okay, no. Don't give me that high sign. She's signaling something. Anyhow, she's driving because I had hand surgery yesterday. It was just for those of you interested, it was just carpal tunnel surgery. So, but I can't do anything with my left hand here for a while. So no shuffling cards and whatnot. So she's driving, and we're in the back seat just chatting and looking forward to the TAOM. And I just wanted to talk to Charlie a little bit about the convention. Who are you looking forward to seeing?
Probably Steve Bidwell is probably be my guy I'm looking forward to seeing the most, just because I've known Steve a long time.
You know, you had hooked me up with him originally to be a roommate way back when. It was at a TAOM. I don't remember what city we were in, and I was looking for a roommate, and you said, well, I don't know if you know this guy, and he was in England at the time, and he was, I think, maybe even still in medical school, and he'd come over, and you said, well, you know, introduced me to him, and...
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Very clever guy.
We first met him, oh, God, I think an IBM convention, I want to say in Salt Lake City, and this has got to be 25-plus years ago.
Yeah.
And he'd had a trick in Genie, and the card under the watch, and I thought it was a cool thing, and he happened to come up to the booth and wanted to look at some books, and we got to talking, and I realized, hey, aren't you the guy that just had the trick in
Genie,
yeah. and he started showing me little finesses and everything, and it was really cool. Got to be good friends, and a few years later, he called Richard and I and said, hey, I'm coming over to Orlando. I'm going to compete in the IBM. You guys mind if I room with you? Like, no, sure, we'd love to have you,
yeah.
Help out a buddy or whatever.
Sure.
And that was the year he won the gold cups.
That's
so,
right.
So Richard and I was used to tease him that, you know, there's three cups there, one for each of us. He didn't go for that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so
that is your share of the your portion of the room. Sharing. Right.
So Steve's really not been around much to magic conventions the last few years. He's come to a few TOMs, but I've
seen him at the Mindvention, you know, in Vegas.
Did he lecture though?
No, he just kind of came to hang out and learn a few things. You know, he lived in
Orlando
for a while, then moved to Dallas, and. Was a performer and a magician, and kind of would promote himself then as being the magician who's more than a doctor, and a doctor's more than a magician, or something like that.
Yeah.
Since he had a medical career.
Now he's doing the speaking. He's huge in the motivational speaking area and stuff.
That was what he was telling me at Mindvention one time, is that he found his little niche, apparently, because he was trying to do magic for doctors, but now they would rather hear him talk about medical things, maybe with a little bit of a magic as kind of a hook.
I know he throws stuff in, like he does memory, you know, mnemonics and memorizing stuff.
Yeah.
And he throws some of that in and everything and all. And I've seen him do a few little things, so I'm really curious to see what he's going to do here this year. And I don't know if it's just a show or a show and a lecture. And I told Marshall, man, we have a bunch of his old lecture notes. Grab those and bring them.
Oh, that's so, right. Yeah.
He had great notes.
I remember when we were rooming together so many years ago, and he was fiddling around with this idea, something to do, it seemed like, with a box, card box, that had like an invisible thread or something with a folded card, so that you could kind of dump out the card in your hand, but then, you know, with your finger kind of flick the invisible thread or the fishing thread line, it would go back up into the card box or something.
Huh.
Does that ring a bell with you?
It doesn't ring any bells.
There was some little thing he came up with way back when, and I think he later put that out. I can't remember what the name of that thing was. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing him, too. Yeah, it's been a long number of years since we've seen Steve Bidwell. Kevin James is going to be another one. You know, he was kind of a last-minute addition, I think, within the last few months.
Right.
And I think that's really a coup, because he's traveling, you know, now, of course, with the Illusionists. And he was just this last weekend here in Houston. You didn't have a
team, did you go?
I did go, and it was really good. He was promoting the Illusionist tour that's going to be coming through Houston next June, and he was on just the big, huge stage, completely naked, bare stage in Jones Hall that seats thousands of people.
I thought you were about to say Kevin was naked. It's like, yeah, I don't see that show. Sorry, Kevin.
Exactly. And so, what was that, Kathy? A what?
Whole different show.
That's right. But he came out and did his bowling ball production, first of all, and then he did the guy, sawing the guy in half, you know, with the chainsaw and the walking legs and everything. So he had this that guy and the nurse, you know, that pushed him out and everything. And then they had, then he did the floating rose, paper rose. Yeah, is that right, Kathy? Yeah, paper rose. And then finished with a snowstorm. You know, filled the stage and had everybody gasping and oohing and aahing. I mean, that he was really the right guy. You know, had they sent Dan Sperry, you know, we were just with Dan last week or two ago, you know, at the Colon get-together. And Dan's show is interesting, you know, and I guess family friendly, but there are a few things he did that he does in the show that you know, like razor blades, you know, from the mouth, things like that, that for something they're trying to promote to the family,
right,
would have not gone over, maybe not have sold as many tickets, you know, as what Kevin was doing. Now, in the context of the rest of the Illusionist show with Jeff Hobson and the other guys who are going to be there, it makes perfect sense, and he adds variety, and it is fantastic with what that he does with his portion of the show.
But I know my daughter saw Dan Sperry. It's been a few years back, and she loved him. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Of course, she's young, so that's her kind of thing. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Kevin
yeah.
What's that, Kathy? What?
Kevin used a little 7-8-year-old girl to produce the rose, and it was very touching, very sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, that was very good. And another one is Max Howard.
Yeah, Max is great.
I'm looking forward to seeing Max.
You know, won an Emmy and all that other good stuff and all, so I mean, you know,
has he won a Tony?
I thought it was an Emmy.
This is an Emmy.
I thought it was an Emmy. Yeah, yeah. I may have it wrong. You know, all those awards look alike to me.
Yeah, I don't have any of them. Yeah. What's that? Yeah, Tony's Broadway. Kathy says, yeah, an Emmy is TV. And for those of you in the UK or Japan or wherever else may not know, yeah, Tony is for Broadway performance and an Emmy is for the television. Well, anyhow, he is kind of like Bob Fitch as far as being a director and everything, so... And he also does a great show as the War Magician.
Yeah.
Civil
really
War Magician,
yeah,
right?
He and his wife, you know, they have their parts or whatever. Yeah, and he comes out as, I'm blanking on the name, but the Civil War Magician.
Like Stonewall Jackson or somebody?
Yeah. You know, Gus Rapp's name comes to mind. I think that's wrong. But
no, Gus Rapp was that other...
Yeah, that's not right. But anyway, that's what he does, and he does it very good. And he's, you know, he's got the character. Yes, and he's got the theater presence and the voice, and it's great.
He lectured to us. Did you come to his lecture in Houston? Now that must have been 15 years ago or so.
I've seen him lecture several times.
Yeah.
Great lecture, yeah.
Very good. Talks about character development, and he was talking with me about going on a lecture tour sometime. And in fact, while we're up here this weekend, he wants to get together, and we're going to discuss that in 2015. So. For some of you cities who might be interested in that, that might be something, you know, later in the year that he might be coming through, and I would highly recommend that because we have a lot of guys who come through and teach some great tricks. We just had Wayne Houchin, which was fantastic.
Oh, that was a great lecture.
Wasn't it a great lecture?
You know, it's not what I expected, you know, because Wayne does the, you know, the thread thing out of the eye.
And he didn't
get
it.
That's not quite my thing.
Yeah.
Not that I have anything with it. You know, Ramsey did the pork beans out of the eyes or whatever and all. So, it's not really my thing, so it's like, all right, I'll go, but there's not going to be anything I like. I loved it all. It was great. It was very commercial. It was a very good lecture.
Very thorough, and it wasn't confusing, didn't have a lot of stuff, but it was very interesting the way he was talking about everything, you know.
He was able to routine stuff, yeah.
Yeah, the routining of it was just interesting.
Tell he works a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good pacing, and very clear, and enunciating, and talk slowly. Excellent. Good job. But anyhow, going to have Max Howard hopefully coming through on the lecture. Honestly, I think as a Stoyle and Ectorina or somebody's going to be.
I don't know. I don't know them at all.
Yeah, they. I'm on their email list. I hear from time to time, and I believe I'm pretty sure they're a Quick Change group. Of course, Master Payne.
Yeah. Oh man. He's a great great storyteller, and you know, he does little slideshow things and everything.
Yeah.
And he's a great column in Magic Magazine. I enjoy his stuff a lot, so I'm looking forward to. I guess we'd see him twice because we do that old timers breakfast.
That's right. We're having the Order of Willard. Now the Order of Willard is kind of like in the IBM. They have the Order of Merlin for those who have 25 years of membership or more, and the Order of Willard being named after Willard the Wizard, who toured, of course, throughout Texas and lived here. And some of his family still attend the TAOM. We have the Willard Award and other kinds of things that are presented. Anyhow, that's going to be tomorrow morning breakfast, and he's going to give a special presentation to our group. And let's see, those are the only ones that kind of off the top of my head I'm thinking of that that I know.
Can you think of anybody else?
I think I have a lot of dealers. I'm sure they'll have probably 30 different dealers.
No, there's actually not a lot of dealers. We were a little surprised.
That's interesting.
I think 10 to 15 this year, which...
You're going to be working with Marshall Peterson at
the H&R? I will be working with Marshall at the H&R booth. And so if you're in the area, come by.
Okay, and Dick Hatch is going to be down or not?
Dick is not. Richard's not going to be there. You know, he always had a problem with TOM in that it's also the same weekend as his mom's birthday.
Oh, that's right.
And there was at least one year, I think it was in Dallas, if I remember correctly, we drove up to the convention, and then Saturday morning, he caught a plane out to Utah. I think it was his mom's 75th birthday, and maybe 70th. It was one of those, you know, milestone birthdays. And flew back on Sunday afternoon. And, you know, so he was there to help us set up, basically, and do some stuff Friday evening, and then help us pack up on Sunday evening, Monday morning. But the rest of the convention, he was gone.
He was not there.
For his brother's birthday. So, yeah.
So. All right. Well, after we get checked in, we'll talk with a few more people after we arrive and find out some other people who are going to be performing and just kind of hanging out. I understand that they have, I'm anticipating, they're having close to 500 registrants or something.
I
heard.
So, I hope so.
You're having a pretty good turnout here at Fort Worth. It's always a good place.
You know, they're going to have that tribute to Art Emerson also.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. They are going to have a special tribute to Art Emerson. And there's supposed to be a lot of things for collectors. In particular, I understand that a select few, I think 30 or 40 randomly chosen people get to go to Arthur Emerson.
Art Emerson.
Arthur Moses.
If you haven't been to Arthur Moses' house, that is a cool...
To see his Houdini collection.
Oh, fantastic.
For those of you who are listening to this, by the way, if you're interested in seeing some pictures or hearing more about Arthur, if you'll just go to the website at themagicwordpodcast.com, you can do a search, use that search engine for Arthur Moses or Houdini, and you can see a podcast that I have done in the past, but also some video and photos that I took. I was a guest at his home for a few days when we did the official Houdini seance a couple of years ago there. So it's fantastic. He's one of the most renowned Houdini collectors in the world. And so I'm curious, and I want to ask him how much of the Houdini collection that he was able to purchase at the recent Potter auction.
Yeah.
Gabe Fieri's auction. Yeah. Did you attend that online or watch some of that?
I'm not a huge Houdini collector.
Yeah.
So there was
some of the prices. Right?
I did see some of the prices. No, maybe I should be a Houdini collector.
I think about some things I could have bought way back when, but who would have known? You know.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, for now, thank you very much. We'll see what happens after we get checked in. Thanks a lot. That was Charlie Randall in for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out. Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com, and we are now in Fort Worth. I have registered, and I thought one of the first people we should talk to would be the president this year for the TAOM Fort Worth, Mr. Bill Irwin. Hi there, Bill.
Hello, Scott. Glad to be here.
Thank you very much, or howdy, I guess I should say.
That's all right.
Because everything is kind of a cowboy-themed thing. You got everybody dressed. I mean, here you are, the 10-star, actually a bronze star, I guess.
Right? actually, that's a real sheriff's badge right there.
Oh, is that right?
That's it.
Yeah, I kind of like the guys wearing chaps and everything and cowboy hats and got the whole Cowtown theme going.
Yeah, it's neat that everybody picked up on that. That's one of the fun things that one of our guys, Hal Hudgens, came up with. And so for today, it is a Western day.
Yeah, and now I noticed that you said you're going to be taking pictures or something around.
There's a room that people can dress up in Western outfits and have their pictures taken. So that'll
with
be
the
fun.
Western theme, kind
with
of thing.
With the Western theme.
What are the kind of surprises or what else is going on that you got this weekend?
Well, every registrant now has picked up almost all the surprises. They've got two CDs, one of which is a lecture by Arthur
Emerson,
and another one is a collection of 785 videos or pictures that were taken.
From the contestants and
over 12 years of history from TAOM.
Oh.
So 785 photos of that cover 12 years.
Yeah.
which was really good. And that was saved from slides. So that's going to be a historical collector's item. And we've also got something else coming on today that everybody's going to be surprised with. We can't tell you what it is right now, sorry.
Well, you can tell me now because I'm not going to broadcast this till tomorrow.
No, I'm not going to tell anybody because we can't let one person know, and that's all
fair
it
enough.
Is. And but it's going to be fantastic, another collector's item because it's going to only be available here. And
well, speaking of Roger Rivers, we're having a special thing with him tonight then, too, because he's our guest of honor, is that?
He's our guest of honor, mm-hmm. and that's what the surprise is about. It's also with him, mm-hmm. and we're celebrating his life and contributions to Magic.
This whole convention is in honor of him.
Effectively, we're working
guest
it that
of honor,
way.
I guess,
that's right.
Okay.
He is our guest of honor, and we're glad to have him.
How about registrations? It's always everybody wants to know about how... You know, conventions are doing, and that there are a lot of other conventions going on this year. What's the registration look like this year?
It's
so far?
Going real well. I'm not going off registration numbers because I'm not even looking at them right now. I'm looking. We've hit our room rates. We don't have any more block available. We've got, and you know, everybody that's here is going to have a good time. We're going to have that's what we're focusing on.
And it's not too late. I mean, are there day registrations available?
We don't have day registrations. Okay. We've got everything's available. It comes as a package, and we've got seats over at Casa Mignana that are still available. So if you want to see the evening shows, whether it's with Master Payne, Dana Daniels, Kevin James, we got a couple new ones like. Dave Chandler, who's been doing real well up north, mm-hmm. and so we've still got those available at Casa Mignana.
And how can they get tickets for that?
All they've got to do is they can go to the box office. They can go online to casamignana.org. O-R-G. Don't do another one. There are copies out there, but they can get the tickets there. We've had some people with some computer problems or something about their systems not going through that route, but they're being sold on Ticketmaster. You can probably use the keyword miracle, but definitely online with CasaMignana.org for most people should work. Also at the box office, they can walk up and get it.
I think I heard that actually you don't spell miracle properly for the code. You leave off the
You can
e,
have
I
a
think.
Discount code for 10% with miracle without an E.
Yeah.
And that's online through Ticketmaster.
Okay. Yep. And so those tickets are the only thing that's available on a daily basis. But for those people, like, again, by the time that I post this for Saturday, mm-hmm. there are going to be
still available
activities for Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Saturday and Sunday are packed.
Yeah, and then Diamond Jim on Monday, and then, giving a great lecture.
That's right. So, and he's got a lot of time on Monday. So, today is a nice, easy day to go get started, but... definitely, Saturday and Sunday are packed to the gills.
So there are tickets still available to register for other shows and lectures.
All they got to do is show up.
And we're here at the Marriott Renaissance downtown Sundance Square.
Yeah, the Worthington Renaissance downtown, right next to Sundance Square. We also have a special event out there, which is ESPN. So you want to just take a roam around Fort Worth. It's one of the neatest downtowns now in the United States. And you can catch up on the ESPN special events today and a little bit tomorrow morning.
On Saturday morning?
On Saturday morning. Yes, I was just checking my time because for the next hour, we got a couple magicians out there.
Oh, doing street magic.
They're doing some walk-around strolling magic, yes.
Very nice.
Yes.
Very good. Well, good. Well, I just wanted to touch base with you on the front end, and hopefully I can get a chance to talk with you afterwards when you kind of take a breather. I mean, I'm glad to have a few minutes with you right now, so later you can kind of tell me.
I'm rolling.
Did it meet your expectations and everything? So
It's exceeding much. Right now it's a blast. We're having fun. The last 2 months have been a blast, and so this
Fantastic.
Is good.
Good. Bill, good thanks people. Very much.
Thank you.
That's Bill Irwin, president of the TAOM 2014. From Fort Worth, this is Scotty out. As President Bill Irwin said, our guest of honor at this TAOM is Mr. Art Emerson. This next thing you will hear is an interview hosted by Mr. Derek Kennedy of Magic Etc. here in Fort Worth, who talks with Art Emerson about some of his history with Emerson and West Card Trick.
Speaking of honors, it was my honor when they first asked me if I'd be honored to interview Arthur Emerson. I said, oh gosh, yes. And after I got asked, I started thinking, well, I got to make a list of questions to ask Arthur. And I thought about it as a really good one. I get just one question and say, Arthur, how are you? And I put the mic down, and he's going to talk for the next 40 minutes. It's the nicest interview I've ever had to do in my entire life. And at the end of the interview, we have a microphone in the audience. If you have time, if anybody out there would like to ask questions, or just say, hey, Arthur, I'm going to see you again, it's all yours. So with that, my good friend Arthur Rivers.
I do hope you appreciate that we've knocked off the $1 charge for asking the question just for tonight, but as of tomorrow, we take it back up again. Where are we going to start?
Well, tell us a little bit about your life. I understand you have like 3 different careers.
Well, I can't keep a job. I spent 20 years in the Army, 1950 to 71. Then we have 30 years of Emerson and West, 67 to 97. Then 20 years as a travel agent taking entertainers around the world overseas. We started that in 1980 and ended in 2000. And then I lost Mildred in 1999. It was no fun doing the traveling without her, so I thought I'd quietly retire. And then the good Lord has a sense of humor. Phone rang one day and said, Arthur, we're going to tear down the theater in Grapevine and put on a brand new thing called the Palace Arts Center. How would you like to run it? That lasted 10 years. So as you see, I really can't settle down and do anything.
So after that, but you mentioned Emerson & West. That's everybody, I think everybody here in the room knows about the great company Emerson & West. This is obviously half of that great group. And everybody knows about them, but why were they so successful? Why was Emerson West so successful?
Where do you start? A lot of what I've been in magic since I was that high. I started getting paid for it when I was that high. I got a real education. I had one season in burlesque, and I learned a lot that year. I just reminisce, ain't you? when we were stationed in Great Britain, the British magician was so far different from what I had experienced here at home. And the first thing I couldn't really get over was the fact that they traded everything with each other, the effects, the ideas, the sleight of hand. There was no inner circle or outer circle. And the magic circle usually meets on a Monday night. And they have to close out early because many of the members have to get the last train home into different parts of England. Everybody else went out to dinner. And, of course, this is where the fun began. I began to realize then what it was, if I stayed in magic, what I'd like to do. Well, we finally get to come home after England to our last, England was our last overseas assignment. I thought it was mine. I got a big surprise. We come home and I join IBM Ring 50 in Washington, D.C. And the guy on the next stool of the bar to me was a gentleman by the name of West. And he and his buddy, Russ Glover, are doing card tricks together. Russ was an interesting character to do card tricks with because he was the head of the Homicide Bureau of the Washington, D.C. Police Department. The least man in God's world you expect to be doing work as a Chinese magician and working as a clown. I have no idea how that ever happened. Anyway, we're setting in Fort Belvoir with my last assignment, and Larry and I got together, and we came across a buddy of his in broadcasting. Now, Larry West was an international broadcaster. He worked for Voice of America.
I don't think a lot of people have any idea what Voice of America is.
Voice of America was the United States Information Agency's propaganda activity for overseas countries. And they had desks for the Iranian at the desk. Every country you can imagine had a desk of their own. Two of the people that were overseas in Germany were a guy by the name of Jim Temple and a guy by the name of Herbert von Hilt. And they were working at number one English Gardens in Munich. And Jim Temple one night sat down and showed us a little thing with 3 cards. And we thought that was awfully clever. Only thing, one thing wrong with it was just a card trick. And I have a feeling that's where Emerson and West had our business plan, because I had taken the time to write a business plan for what I wanted to do in magic, and it involved a pack of tricks, and here's Jim with this 3-card thing. It had no story. It had no ending. And after about two scotches for me and three bourbons for West, we decided, why don't we get together and put this thing on the market? Because Larry had the idea for the $14 ending. That's his. I had the entire story about going, the guy that comes to the fair every year, you owe me a dollar, you owe me a dollar, you owe me a dollar. And this is all being done with only two scotches and three bourbons, which I thought was fascinating. Good. If we had one more bourbon, it might have been a better trip. We gave Jim Temple $25 for the rights of the trip. Big day. We gave Roger Lindsay $50 to draw the $14 cartoon that's on the back of the cards. And we had yet to sell one. Well, this became kitchen table magic. We sold it for $3 a piece initially. That's what they were. And that was the beginning of Color Monty. It was very nice to have a winner at the very beginning. And the second thing was something that West did called...
Well, let me ask one question. People always ask the question, how many Color Montys do you think you sold?
We'll never know. We will never know. Betty Jo was sitting over there when we finally, in 72, got control of the manufacture of Emerson and West Cardricks. Then Betty Jo and her husband John Standage owned Newmore Manufacturing. And the nice part about that was we were, thank God, we were wholesalers and not retailers. I didn't want to sell by the one. I wanted to sell by the dozen at least, and preferably by the thousand. And it actually ended up that we did end up selling by the thousand. Many shows activity turned out over the years about 50,000. I took it to Britain, and they wanted to print it themselves over there. They still wanted the $14 ending, which I could not understand. I didn't care. I just took the money and went home. They turned around 65,000 in the English-speaking community that they control, Great Britain, Ireland, Canada. Years later, we got to the point where this thing's got to be fading out. It's been on the market now for 20 years, and it's still selling well. And along came Stuckey's, and Stuckey's decided they wanted to print them, and they put them on paint boards, and every Stuckey's that you went to as you went down the highway. That broke my heart. I have no idea how many they printed, which is why I can't answer your question of how many are there. And we were sure about 25 years into Emerson and West that this is over. And we had people that loved the trick but didn't like the $14 ending in their country. Particularly South Africa didn't like it, the Orient didn't like it. So I went and found two more scotches. And we made a deal that I sold to Hans Trixer for $1,000, the rights to print Color Monty anywhere in his country he wanted to. He owned it, he could print it, he could distribute it, didn't care. We turned around and sold the same routine to Takashi Nemoto in Osaka, so he took care of Japan and part of China, Johnny Teo, and it goes on like that. I can't answer your question. There's somewhere very, very close to 500,000 copies.
You imagine 500,000 copies of Color Monty. Amazing.
Absolutely ridiculous.
So you were mentioning Larry had another follow-up to that one. You were going to say something about?
Well, the follow-up after that, of course, was 8-Ball. And 8-Ball was nice. 8-Ball belongs to a very lovely man by the name of Phil Thomas, who owned Yogi Magic Mart in Baltimore, Maryland. And the first time that Emerson West ever went to a convention to actually sell a card for the Columbus Magi Fest. We were working away, and those days you worked in your room. In fact, you took the bed apart and put it up against the wall, got a banquet table, stood behind the banquet table, opened the door to your room, and in they came. Early conventions. Our thing's better at the convention room you have here. So, Phil is watching us work, and we've done some business. Phil walks over and says, "You guys are very clever. You have only one problem." I said, "Really? What's that?" He said, "You don't know when to stop and take money." Okay. And stop entertaining yourselves and start working the audience. And he said, "You know, you've sooner or later got to learn how to qualify the audience." And one of the best pieces of advice I ever got in my life was qualifying the audience. And here's what we did every year from that point on. Part of the business plan was to put out three tricks a year. We copied this from John Lawton. Don Lawton used to put out for Dr. Judd 3 tricks for every convention. He bring one trick down on Monday and would sell only that one trick. On a Tuesday, he brought the second one down. And the guy comes along and says, I'd like to have the one that you had yet. He said, I'm sorry, we've sold out. He had it, but he wouldn't sell it. On the next day, we put the third one out, and that was how Don put that together. Phil says, you want to think about that. Why don't you put out a trick for no sleight of hand at all? One simple sleight, and one, oh my God. And we did that for the next 25 years. So the guy walks up and says, oh, have you ever bought an Emerson West pack a trick before? Yes, we have. What did you buy last time? And you've just qualified the customer. And he just told you whether he bought this one, or this one. And this year, of course, you have the matching 3. So you had a customer continuity as to what they were learning, what they bought before. We could sell again. It made the sales easier, and it made that a great deal easier. We did that for almost the rest of our lives as far as Emerson West was concerned. Even though we had put together more than one trick in 1 year, or one extra trick, we did 3 a year. The biggest part of the business plan is West is a genius when it comes to cards. If you're going to have a partner in magic, for God's sake, pick a genius. And we never should have gotten together at all. We were a Gilbert and Sullivan combination. He ran around in Hawaiian shirts. I was coat and tie. Well, you heard. He drank bourbon. I drank scotch. He loved to practice card tricks that were very intricate. I never practiced at all. I rehearsed and he practiced. And between that sort of thing, it worked. Also, we trusted each other implicitly. Whatever he said, that's how it would be. Here's the slide that belongs in this trick. Hey, that's his department. He owns it. We'll do it. And I turn around and do something really stupid, and I say, that's a good line. Keep it in, you know? So this trust of each other was very nice, and worked our entire career together. But we never wanted to do a card trick that was just playing cards. Otherwise, Charlie would go home with the secret and do the trick. So I've always thought of myself as being a storyteller. So all the Emerson West packet tricks have a story. They also have no regular playing cards. They have pictures. And if you don't have the picture, you can't tell the story. So the packet trick industry, why was it popular? Location, location, location. Our location was in time. We hit it at the right time. Packet tricks were just coming to this country. Trost was just entering the market. Fulvis was entering the market. And we hit it with packet tricks. And we lucked out. The next thing we figured out, we had to have a thing called product identity. Every packet trick Emerson West put out looked just like the last one. Emerson and West present John Jones, whatever the trick was. And John Jones' name appeared on there. And that was sort of fun, because we wanted the best people we could imagine to give us their ideas to put out the trick. And back in those days, and Lou Tannen never forgave me for this, he was on the phone and berated me for an hour one day, you've got to stop paying these people. If you gave a trick to Lou Tannen, he gave you $50 worth of goods off the shelf. Now, since he keystoned everything in the place, that ran about $27. And that's all he ever paid anybody for cards. We came across people like Peter Kane, Max Maven, a whole lot, Bob Lawson, all have their names on Emerson West packet trick. Because I said, here's our deal. You may or may not like it. If you don't like it, just say so and it's over. What we do is this. We will pay you 5% of retail. We print by the thousand, and we pay you on the day that we print. This is the best gimmick I ever thought of. Because now we can have them come to us and say, have you seen this? And along comes Gypsy Curse.
How did Lieutenant handle that when you told him how you paid your customers?
You got to stop paying these people. You got to stop paying these people. I can't afford that sort of thing. I said, Lou, that breaks my heart. and apparently, didn't think that was humor.
Did anybody ever come to you with a trick that was just so handily and so too many moves? You just said you've got to clean this up.
I take you back to Columbus, Ohio. 18-year-old lad walks into the room and he wants to show us. Now people have got tricks to us. Knowledgeable people, amateurs, don't care. They've all got great ideas. And so he walks in and he shows us this card trick. The bad news is that the first move in the trick is a double-double lift, two double lifts being done simultaneously, and the guy's got no pattern or any reason. He just said, let me show you a trick, and he starts it. Well, obviously, we're never going to sell this. Now, Wes does his best thinking while sitting in the bathroom. So he has already excused himself and he's gone to sit on the throne. And I'm letting the kid down very gently and thank you very much for coming and bringing your idea over to us. If you have any more, be sure to bring it to us. And so when suddenly this voice comes out of the bathroom and says, don't let the kid out of the room. I said, hold on just a second. Larry wants to talk to you. Now, do I understand that this is, Larry sits there and does the trick for the kid with no sleight of hand whatsoever. He's taken all the slice out, used simple card moves. I think we sold 35,000 of the thing that's called Flipped Out. And that's where that came from.
And it's still asked for today. And unfortunately, a lot of the Emerson West tricks are not produced anymore because you sold the rights.
We sold the rights. And then they went to Fun Incorporated in Chicago. And Fun Incorporated just got sold. And we have no idea what the new owners are doing with...
They're producing two of the tricks as far as I know. Calamonte and 8-Ball, I believe,
really?
Are the only two that are being produced.
There are 121 Emerson & West tricks. So
if you even like collect things, you've got to find all 121 of them.
From your lips to God's ears.
You know, out of those 121, was there one you just dreaded ever doing or
favored
to do?
Every now and again, God satisfied me would have an idea... that didn't work at all. And they were usually mine. And I would go to him and he'd say, you know, we invented a trick called cutoff, which was absolutely the worst trick in the world. Basically because John couldn't make it and wouldn't admit it, because it was the only trick that ever had a full deck of cards. And it was his cutting and stamping and making, they were different sizes. We couldn't cut 108 cards at one time like Brown Bigelow can do. They were all absolutely identical. Ours were, shall we say, different. So we put this thing on the market. The trick was very simply that the magician cuts the ace of clubs, the ace of diamonds, the ace of spades, and says, now I've shown you how to cut the ace, you go ahead and cut the ace, and the customer cuts the ace himself. Only because the deck is all one ace. It's one way fortunate with the gimmick. It wasn't bad. It was bloody awful.
So that one didn't really make it to the market very long.
I think we probably made 14 of them.
So 121, that's one of your most rare. That's the most rare.
There's got to be a downside to this story somewhere.
But you know, I've never seen you always at conventions and watching you demonstrate and everything. And I never got to meet Larry myself. And
yeah.
He passed away when?
Larry died in 1989. He was born in Ithaca, New York in 31, so he was 58. And he was always willing to take anybody's shift at the Voice of America. And so if the guy had a holiday or a Christmas or a Rosh Hashanah, he was, oh, I'll take your, what desk are you on? I'm on the Bulgarian desk tonight. I said, I'll take the Bulgarian. And of course, you've got to be on the microphone at the time that that country is listening to the United States. So they're working odd hours of the day. And he'd come off the shift and he would go home and take a nap, and then Lois would call him for dinner, and that's how life went over. And one particular evening in 1989, he was coming off one of those shifts, he was covering someone else. He came home and took a nap and never woke up. That was the end of the story.
But you decided to continue on with Emerson West from there.
Well, Emerson West continued, but I don't work well without a partner, and I badly needed a partner. The next thing that happened, Ab Dixon and I put out a thing called the Containers. And
I've got a set of those, yeah, the boxes. Yeah.
They were a nest of boxes where the covers were not all in the same direction. When you opened one cover, the next one came out sideways, and there was the cover. You turned it, the next one came out sideways. And I think there were six or seven. And these boxes came in from Hong Kong. And, you know, if you've ever seen a motion picture theater get a box of popcorn, it's already popped, they're that cube, okay? So with these boxes from Hong Kong were, they would come to the front door and says, I've got a box I can hardly get out of the back of the truck that only weighs 4 pounds. That's ours. We'll take it right here. He says, thank God I get rid of this thing. Here it is. And so we start putting boxes together. So I got to work with some other people along the way. And then some of the people who were people that we featured on our cover became partners in putting the act together. Peter Kane in particular was very helpful in that regard. That's how Gypsy Curse was born.
And you got hired by different companies, big corporations, to do things for them, I'm sure.
Oh, how dumb can you be? When we were, we had no idea. Excuse me, we had no idea what the commercial side of Emerson West might look like. The guy comes up to the convention, magic convention. He says, the thing with the eight ball, that's self-working, isn't it? I said, yep, you'll just lay it down. No slice, no nothing, just do it. Where do you print your cards? I said, why do you want to know? He says, well, I think I could find a way that if you like, my company could use that trick with their logo on the card instead of an apple. Oh, really? Talk about naivete. So we made a little deal. This is a soft drink company. And so we started printing them with their logo on it. And that went fine. And we were happy with the orders. They were big orders. So they were going to give these things to their salesmen as salesmen's giveaways. They could go to a retailer and give it to him because it's self-working. They could do it and hand it to him and didn't even have to teach it to him. They were self-taught. Great idea. Perfect salesman's giveaway. And then the phone rings. They said, Mr. Emerson, can you and Mr. West come down to Atlanta and teach the salesman how to do the routine? Sure we will. Second paycheck, same trick. So we go down there, we taught them how to do it. That's just great. A few months go by, and the phone rings. And they said, Mr. Emerson, we've got a trade show. Third paycheck, same trick. The two of us got hired to go out there and work the trade show for them. And the trade show was fun. Now, the problem if you've ever worked a trade show yourself, you're working for a sales manager that hates magic. The only reason you are there is to draw a crowd, and then as soon as you've drawn the crowd, he wished the hell you would drop dead. Because he doesn't need you anymore. You've done all that you're paid for. So finally you draw the crowd, and all that he wants is everybody's calling card and the three rows of customers you have in front of you at the booth. That's why he gets paid. I said, well, we've got to figure some mechanism to spill the crowd when we're through it. You know, fill, spill, and refill, the old theater game. So I said, why don't you set up a station over at the corner over there, and we'll give the little cards away that are on the table that just did the trick to the people, and if they take the card over there, they get a free drink. And that's how we spill the crowd. And he thought that was a marvelous idea. As long as he was happy, I was happy because I liked the check. I took over the booth for a while. Wes went out to get a bourbon, I think. And he comes back and says, you know, tonight, the kid that's pouring the drinks over there, we're going to take him to dinner. Why would we take him to dinner? You haven't seen it? I'll take the table. Go over and watch it. And these people, and this sunny young man has got all personality and is cheery and happy as could possibly be. He says, ah, you have one of the cards. Let me have that back. He tears it in half and drops it on the floor and pours the guy a drink. We found him the biggest stake we could think of that night. No one ever thought of recycling the cards. They tore them in half every time they did it. Broke my heart.
So you went to a lot of the specialty printed.
Didn't we know?
Other times I remember seeing you at magic conventions. You would, I guess, demonstrate other items maybe brought in by other people. And
Well, once we get to the overseas market, they want to see American magic, and we have a lot of good inventors. Norm Nielsen is an example. Had a whole line of goods that he didn't want to take overseas himself. He'd been a high entertainer in his day overseas, and well known. So we made a deal with him to take his products overseas. And over there we meet a guy named Alan Warner, and we bring him across the ocean this way. Tony Andretti the same way. So we start bringing Andretti and Warner into this country and taking folks from this country overseas. And this filled in the gap when Larry West doesn't exist anymore. Do you realize there never was anybody named Larry West? There's a young man who didn't like his name at all, and he did everything possible to make sure that no one ever read the fact that he was Gilbert Lorenzo West. And he thought that was awful. So he was Larry West for the rest of his life.
Did you guys ever compete who was going to be first? Was it West and Emerson, or was it always Emerson and West? How'd that happen?
No, really, first of all, we get advised by, we're back to Phil Thomas again, he says, no, when you name an act, it's so-and-so is up, da-da-da and buff, da-da-da and buff. And that's the alliteration and euphony of a name. Stick to Emerson and West.
You had more syllables, so you came first.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's worse than you can imagine, because later years, when we're getting quite successful, West had no financial interest in the company at all. He didn't want to touch money, he didn't want to touch anything. All he wanted was the ability to have copies of the card tricks when he wanted to go out and do lectures of his own. And I married a professional bookkeeper. She knew immediately we could make this thing run by ourselves, God bless her. And it did. And so we were very happy. Unfortunately, I had two children that ate much too much. And we were able, with Emerson and West, to
defeat... Well, it's good that you sold all those color Montys. Does that put them through school?
Yeah, of course.
It helped.
We're going to have to get out of here, because there's a guy that comes up on after this, and I want to see him. Well, give me a couple of seconds.
Before we do this, before we go away, we've got a few minutes. Does anybody have a question they'd like to ask Arthur?
No.
Or,
no.
Or a hello, good to see you again?
No. We don't do Q&A.
Well, we could, like I said, he's quite the storyteller. But I've got a question, actually, the story for you. In the program, I think everybody's got a copy of the program at the down. It says in there they were giving away a color Monty. Did you see that?
Yes. Yeah.
I know nothing
about it at all.
I've got one in my pocket.
Oh, really?
It's a special color Monty.
Oh.
And on the front of it, it says TAOM, Fort Worth, Texas.
That's lovely.
So, on the inside, it's going to have the same three cards as always. It has, of course, the red diamond. What was the red diamond symbol? Anything special?
Nothing. No.
It's the red diamond. It also had the blue card. Now, this you call the money card.
Of course. You've got to find out the blue card. And if you know what the blue card is, you get $1. You got to know where it is. You owe me a dollar.
So, that's funny you should say, owe you a dollar. Wouldn't it be great that every time someone did color money, they actually owed you a dollar?
That's right.
So I think the new green card should say,
you owe Arthur $14.
We have these special printed up. Everybody here will get one of these. And it's a giveaway. The waivers works. They're all outside out there. You'll show your badge. They'll clip your badge with a hole so you can't get a second one. I'm sorry. We're putting it up for everybody. They're going to be outside in the lobby after we're through. But Arthur, you hadn't seen this there. This one's yours.
I thank you.
You get to keep that one. I think it's a good likeness of you there.
Do I owe you a dollar?
So, with that, I guess if anybody has no questions for Arthur, I mean, I've enjoyed our friendship. He and I, a lot of stuff. We've traveled together many, many times. We've gone to Chicago, to Magic Collectors. I'm not a flyer. He's a flyer. So he's always kind of made me calm and flying. Except one time, you may not remember that one time, the plane started dipping and dipping and dipping. And I remember you turning back and looking at me with your drink in your hand, and you toasted me. I was scared to death at that point. The plane was continuing on down. And then we were out in Chicago in a snowstorm, and it thunder and lightning and rain and snowed on us. So we've traveled and roomed together over the years. He's a great friend, a great person.
American Airlines never forgive me.
And he loves to talk to you. And he has one of the things you always like to tell everybody. What's the last thing you want to tell him about you?
Well, let me give you one 30-second thought for you to take home with you. That's not magical. Magic is an art. In my mind, I see magic sort of like a well-cut diamond. I'll tell you why. You look at this room, and there's a number of different disciplines in magic represented by all of you. And like a diamond, each one of you has polished one facet of that diamond. You may do the card trick facet. Later years, you may turn around the corner and do the mentalism facet. But most of you don't know every one of them, which is why you can sit at a convention and enjoy watching the other artists that do what you don't. So we seemingly still, to this day, entertain each other because of this idea that you're really only dealing with one tiny bit of a diamond. The odd part about the diamond is it has something that rewards you. The one thing that holds all of you together, everybody in this room, is that you're creative. You're also problem solvers. Every one of you. Or you wouldn't be doing magic. Now, the one last thought I have, and take a look at the people that precede us. Don't ever, ever, ever give up magic as a hobby. Because if you will stay with it, you will live longer for the rest of your life than you ever imagined. Magic will keep you young, keep you mentally active, and you'll enjoy 87 as much as I do, as much as John Calvert liked 101, Di Vernon's 98. Stick with magic. I thank you for watching.
Thank you to Arthur Emerson.
For more content, including pictures of those I spoke with in this podcast, commentary, links, timestamps, show notes, and more, be sure to visit the webpage at themagicwordpodcast.com. And you can help spread the word by liking the Magic Word Podcast on Facebook and sharing with your friends. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening. Till next time, Scotty out.